यस्य का भाषा समाधिस्थस्य केशव स्थितधि किं प्रभाषेत किमसित व्रजेत किं किम आसित व्रजेत किम। Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? And what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? Purport. As there are symptoms for each and every man in terms of his particular situation, similarly, one who is Krishna conscious has his particular nature, talking, walking, thinking, feeling, etc. As a rich man has his symptoms, by which he is known as a rich man, as a diseased man has his symptoms, by which he is known as diseased, or as a learned man has his symptoms, so a man in transcendental consciousness of Krishna has specific symptoms in various dealings. One can know his specific symptoms from the Bhagavad Gita. Most important is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks, for speech is the most important quality of any man. It is said that a fool is undiscovered as long as he does not speak, and certainly a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks, but as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. The immediate symptom of a Krishna-conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and of matters relating to him. Other symptoms then automatically follow, as stated below. Arjuna Uvacha. Stita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhi stasya keshava stita dhi king prabhasheta kimasita vrajeta kim. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak and what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? Om jnana tmirandhasya jnanam. Famous term, stita pragya. It's well known amongst followers of Bhagavad Gita, this term, stita pragya. Is it not? You've heard this term before, stita pragya. In South India especially, people often ask about this. Stita pragya. Samadhi stasya, one who is fixed in samadhi. Stita pragya, stita dhi, means fixed intelligence. Sometimes people ask us, how can I concentrate? I want to study for my exams, but I can't concentrate. So Arjuna, he's asking about the stita dhi. He's not thinking of how you can concentrate to pass your exams. He's asking of one who is samadhista, who is fixed in samadhi, transcendence. Because previous to this, Krishna has described, he described about the materialistic people who are too much attached to the worldly, the flowery words of the Vedas, whose intelligence is not fixed. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayaprahita chetasam yavasayatmika buddhi samadho navidhiyate. The people who are yamimang pushpitang vacham kavadam yavipasthitaha vedavadirata parta nanadasthiti vadi. Now those who are attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, they're attached to sense gratification, their consciousness cannot be fixed. Whereas one whose consciousness is fixed in the transcendence, one-pointed, vyavasayatmika buddhis, the vyavasayatmika, whose consciousness is one-pointed, ekeha kuru nandana, they are the situated in transcendence. Sometimes it's said that the secret in life is one thing. Do you follow? The secret in life is one thing. And then sometimes people ask, well, which thing? There's one thing. Whatever it is, you should fix your mind on one thing. Don't try to do one thing. Actually, the one thing you should fix your mind on is Krishna. But even materially speaking, if you want to be successful in something, you have to fix your mind on it. You can't think, just like now it's exam time, the students are studying like anything. Are they? Maybe. Some of them are cheating their parents and coming to the Bhagavad Gita class in the ISKCON temple, but they're supposed to be fixed in their studies. Now is not a time for going to parties or going to temples even, the parents will say. You should fix your mind on one thing, then only you can pass. So the secret of life is one thing, but someone whose intelligence is diverted here and there, he can't fix his mind on one thing. Now we'll find the answer to this question. Krishna answers practically the rest of this chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is answering, what is the symptom of the sthitadhi? That his senses are under control. He controls his senses. He is not controlled by his senses. But one who is bhogaishvarya prasaktanam, who is prasakta, he's very much attached, very strongly attached to the sense gratification. He can't fix his mind because the senses, they have so many different objects. And we see in the modern age, advertising, they're simply, buy this, buy that, use this toothpaste, it will increase your sense gratification. If you use Colgate toothpaste, you will get the Colgate ring of confidence. And then, you can go close to someone and smile at them to increase your sense gratification. Or if you use surf, then your children's clothes will be so white and the other women will look and their children's clothes is not so white. So in this way, there are so many objects there. They're recommended. Buy this motorbike. Enjoy. Ye lagao. Gadi badao. Enjoy. Get on the... Put in the gear. Strap yourself in the seat and zoom off into... Smash your head into a truck. They're advertising. Enjoy. So many ways you can enjoy. But such people... They can never have fixed intelligence. Krishna is recommending. Withdraw your senses. What is his answer? What is the answer? The first thing is, prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. When you give up all desires for sense gratification, atman yevatmana tushta, when you're satisfied in the self, stitta pragyasta dochati, that is considered a sthita pragya, not one who is trying to enjoy the senses. He can never advance in spiritual life. So Arjuna is a very intelligent person. Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because he's very intelligent. If he had to speak to the average scholar of Bhagavad Gita, they go on all their life studying, they don't understand. Arjuna understood very quickly. So Arjuna is asking a very intelligent question, that Krishna has described the person who's situated in transcendence, that he's no longer bewildered by the words of the Vedas. It's actually, if you think what Krishna is saying, it's quite a surprising thing it may be, because of course Arjuna he's the younger brother of Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira was in the forest for so many years, and the whole Mahabharata, of which the Gita is part, it's all about dharma. Yudhishthira is thinking how we should follow dharma, and in the forest they're consulting with different sages about dharma, and in the forest from time to time Bhima says, hey look, I'm fed up, let's just give me permission and I'll go and kill all the Kauravas by myself. And Yudhishthira says, no, you have to follow dharma, you have to do it in the right way. And sometimes Bhima says, to hell with this dharma, I just want to kill all those Kauravas. So dharma, they're very in following dharma. So dharma is that which is described in the Vedas. But here Krishna is saying the Vedas, They're not much interested in the Vedas. It's just a bunch of rubbish about going to the heavenly planets. Most of the Vedas is all simply concerned with the three modes of material nature. Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna. The Vedas are concerned with the three modes of material nature. Don't be interested in that, Arjuna. Forget about all that. When your intelligence has passed out of the forest of delusion of considering sense gratification as offered in the Vedas to be something important, then you can come to the real purpose of life. This is Gita Upanishad. The Upanishads, the Upanishads, they mostly come in the Jnana Kanda. First of all, there's Karma Kanda. So most of the Vedas are concerned with Karma Kanda. Then there's the Upanishads. When you're fed up with trying to enjoy life through the Vedas, then Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now you've been through all the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, now it's time to come to the Brahma Jignyasa, Jnana Kanda, which will ultimately lead us to Upasana Kanda, or worship of Krishna. So Krishna is saying, reject all the Vedas, come to the transcendental. Not exactly reject the Vedas, but reject the improper understanding of the Vedas. Then you'll be transcendental. Don't be locked up in the three modes of material nature. So Arjuna is asking, very intelligently, what are the symptoms of someone who is situated in transcendence? How am I to know what is such a person? How do you recognize it? What are the symptoms of such a person? How will I know such a person? Because everyone has their symptoms. A rich man has his symptoms. He has lots of money, he's driving around in a big car, although you can't always tell. Sometimes they hide it away. Previously in Indian culture, I used to see the big rich Marwari. You can't tell he's any different from anyone else, because they walk around in a simple dhoti and eat simple food, and you can't tell he's got crores and crores of rupees. He'll be sitting in some small office, leads a very simple life, but he's got crores and rupees. He may not show it. But generally, someone has the certain symptoms. What are the symptoms? So Arjuna is asking, what are the symptoms of a Krishna conscious or a person who's situated in transcendence? And the first thing he asks, Stita Pragyasya Ka Bhasha. How does he speak? Prabhupada picks this up. This is the most important point. How does he speak? What is his speech? Prabhupada says that the most important symptom of a Krishna conscious person is how he speaks. When John Lennon and George Harrison and Yoko Ono, maybe you haven't heard of them, no loss if you didn't, in the Western countries they're very famous, at least they used to be. John Lennon got shot dead. And anyway, they were very famous at the time, entertainers. Just like in Tamil Nadu, your Rajinikanth is very famous, or Amitabh Bachchan is famous in North India. So in the Western countries, John Lennon, like that, George Harrison, very, very, very famous, very popular. So they came to meet Prabhupada, and I think it was John Lennon and Yoko Ono, his wife. They asked, they said, well, so many people are speaking, so many gurus, so many people are giving commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, so how can we know who's the true guru? It's a good question. So Prabhupada said, you can judge who is speaking about Krishna. Who is only speaking about Krishna? Actually, I think he said about God. They were asking, who is the God-realized person? How can we tell? Everyone's saying they're God-realized. Prabhupada said, he gave the reply, who is always speaking about God, he is a God-realized person. That is the main symptom. He doesn't speak of anything else. Now sometimes you'll see even Prabhupada, actually it's amazing how much Prabhupada all the time speaking about Krishna. He would Harishchandra Prabhu, his servant, he gave a synopsis in one of his Vyasa Puja offerings of a day in the life of Prabhupada. He said, actually there's no real beginning. You can't say when it really begins, because he's active pretty much all in the 24 hours. But he gets up, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, dictates the translations of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he chants japa, then he goes for a morning walk. On the morning walk he's speaking about Krishna, then he comes and gives the class in the temple, then during the day he's speaking with devotees, he gives class in the evening, all the time speaking about Krishna. Now sometimes you'll find Prabhupada would have long, intricate conversations with some of his disciples discussing about management, bank accounts, so many things. So you may say, well, what's that got to do with Krishna? But here Prabhupada says, the immediate symptom of a Krishna conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and of matters relating to him. So if you discuss about devotional service, it may be similar to what a Karmi speaks. But if it's in relation to devotional service, it's transcendental. You may go to a bank and discuss what is the best account we should open for our temple. You want to save some money for building a temple. What is the best account? So you'll be discussing interest rates and equity and so many different things, just like a materialistic person may do, but it's for the sake of Krishna. So this is the main symptom of a Krishna conscious person. Now, Prabhupada says that if one speaks of Krishna, other symptoms automatically follow. And Krishna goes on to explain in detail how the self-realized person, his senses are under control. But the senses become under control if we are Krishna conscious. Here in the beginning of Gita, Krishna hasn't so much revealed what is the essence of Gita, that is to be Krishna conscious. He's speaking here generally about self-realization. That means there are self-realized non-devotees also. It means they're partially self-realized. They've realized that I am the self. Aham Brahmasmi, I am the self, I am spiritual. But they haven't realized that I am the self, I am the servant of the Supreme Self. But still, it can be said that they are self-realized, Brahman-realized, but not Bhagavan-realized. So they have certain symptoms also, who's actually Brahman-realized, his senses are under control, at least for the time being. He may fall from that platform, but his senses are under control. He doesn't interact with this material world for the sake of sense gratification. Just like a tortoise, kapchap, kurma, he withdraws when he sees that there's some attraction from the sense objects that the Maya is offering. He withdraws his senses, just like a tortoise when he sees danger. He withdraws his limbs within the shell for safety. Actually, that just reminds me, somewhere I saw him, I think it must have been on a plane. They have these TV programs on the airplanes, on Aeroflot. I remember now when I was coming from Moscow. So they had this nature movie. They go out into the forest, and they show all the different, and actually it shows all the different species, they're all trying to kill each other. So it showed some young wild dogs, how they came, and there was a big tortoise, and he saw the dogs coming, so he withdrew his body within the shell, but then it was such a big tortoise that his shell was like this, and the dog put his mouth right in the side and bit, and he was trying to pull the tortoise limbs out so that he could eat him. So I remember this example of the Bhagavad Gita, how The yogi withdraws his senses like the tortoise withdraws his limbs. But Maya is such that even if you withdraw, Maya will go right in and try to pull you out. So ultimately, the consciousness has to be purified. Otherwise, Maya can come. Even you withdraw yourself from the sense objects. I'm not going to go to the movies. I'm not going to go to the TV. I'm not going to read Cineplex. I'm not going to go to restaurants. But still, if there's an opening, just like the dog will put his mouth in and try to pull the tortoise out. So if there's an opening, Maya will come inside. That's why they have to be fully guarded from Maya by purification of consciousness. And if one is in purified consciousness or Krishna consciousness, then automatically the senses come under control. There are two kinds of approaches. One is an attempt to mechanically control the senses, and the other attempt is to fix the mind on Krishna, by which the senses automatically come under control. Both are required. Both are required. We should follow certain rules and regulations, just like don't go to the movies, don't watch TV, don't mix up male, female, should be restricted. All these things, they are there. So that as not to unnecessarily agitate the senses. So if the senses are not very much agitated, then we can develop our Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, we have to develop our Krishna consciousness that is required, because without that we cannot properly control our senses. So both things, positive and negative processes, are going on side by side. But unless there is at least some acceptance of basic rules and regulations, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, rise early in the morning, unless we have all these things, unless there's a basic platform of sadhachar, of proper behavior, then even to begin to develop Krishna consciousness, it's not possible. But then when we build that Krishna consciousness on the platform of at least preliminary sense control, by becoming Krishna conscious, that is the process by which our senses will become fully under control, which is not possible without Krishna consciousness. I'll speak more about this verse tomorrow. It's a very important verse. Are there any questions now? Question? Yeah. One who doesn't follow the Vedic path, he is. One who is faithless, he is destroyed. Evam pravajitam chakram, who don't follow the Vedic path. In the third chapter of Gita, Krishna describes the Vedic path of offering sacrifices. First of all, there is prescribed duties. When one performs his prescribed duties properly, then he can perform sacrifices. When there are sacrifices, there's rain. When there's rain, there's foodstuffs. And then with the foodstuffs, you can offer them to the demigod. So it's a cycle. Evang pravartitam chakra. So one who follows that, he can be happy. And one who doesn't follow it, he cannot be. Where's that sangshayatma vinashati? Where does that verse come? No, that's another verse. Who doesn't follow the Vedas, who doesn't follow the Shastra, he is spoiled. Huh? And again Krishna says, Vaidaischa Savaraham Eva Vedyaha. I am to be understood by the Vedas. Yes, so Krishna is to be understood by the Vedas, but the Vedas, they have flowery words. Much of it is full of flowery words, meant simply to attract people to the Vedic path. But the real message of the Vedas is to understand Krishna. So yes, if you don't follow the Vedic path, you're really finished. The Vedic path will at least save you from entering hellish life. At least if you follow Karma Kanda. But that's not the deal. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you have to go beyond that. You have to understand the inner purpose of Vedas. See, Arjuna is acting as a Kshatriya. He could be doing that for the sake of going to the heavenly planets, which Krishna also said, that if you're killed, you'll go to the heavenly planets. And then after that, later on he says, Tetam Bhukta Swagalokam Vishalam Shine Punye Marchalokam Vishanti Evam Traitam Anapapana Tathagatam Kama Kama Labhante. He says that, what is all this going to the heavenly planets nonsense? You go up and you come down again. What's the use? So, from one side, following the Vedas, even the Karmakanda process is good. In other words, for someone who's not following anything to come to the Vedic path, that means he's in a much better position. But for one who's following the Vedic path, he shouldn't simply remain stuck on the materialistic understanding of it, but he should come to the real understanding of the Vedas, which is not simply to fool around, going to the heavenly planets, come down again, but to go back to home, back to Godhead. So both things are there. Just like, I'll give an example. Sometimes we ask someone, where's Narayan Swami? Narayan Swami, how many rounds are you chanting a day? Now, if we ask someone who's just newly coming to Krishna consciousness, are you chanting Hare Krishna? Yes. How many rounds a day? 2 rounds a day. Oh, very good. Now, if I ask you, how many rounds are you chanting a day? And say, 2 rounds a day, I'll say, what? You already promised to chant 16. So what is good for one person is not good for someone else. In a lower stage, if you're in a lower stage, then for you to come up to a higher stage is good. But if someone, for someone who's supposed to be on a higher level, that same stage is not very good. So another point is that actually all the Vedas, because Krishna says, Vedas, all the Vedas are meant for understanding me. Now this can be understood in two ways. It can be understood, one way of understanding is that all the whole Vedic path is meant to lead us to Krishna. In other words, there's Karma Kanda, and then when you get fed up of that, you come to Jnana, and then when you finally Bahunam Dhammanamante Jnana Vang Mangapadyate, when you finally get through all, after many lifetimes, you understand, actually, Krishna is the real goal. Another way of understanding is that even the pushpitamba cha, even the flowery words, even that, ultimately, if you understand it properly, is only describing Krishna, because Vede Ramayana Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adab Ante Chamadhe Cha Hari Sarvatra Giyate. All the Vedas, they simply describe Krishna. So one who has the vision, he can see that. Madhvacharya, he explained just like you'll find in different parts of the Vedas. There's glorification of Indra, glorification of Agni, glorification of Varuna. But Madhvacharya explains that actually when said Indra, that means only Krishna. Indra means king. Agni, who is the ultimate king? Krishna. Just like Mahindra is a common name for who? The king of heaven. But that's also one of the names of Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasranama. You'll find in Vishnu Sahasranama, what is that? Sarva, Sharva, names of Lord Shiva. But they're ultimately their names of Vishnu. Shiva, that name itself, means auspicious. So ultimately it's the name of Krishna. So that's another way to understand. You don't look very convinced. Sangshayatma vinashyati. Who said that verse just now? Is this Krishna conscious movement real, or is it just some cheating? They're just extracting money out of me. What do you think, Narayan Swami? You don't think anything? You should think of something. Sorry? You have to shout. I have a mic, and I'm shouting also. All right, what is it? Yeah. So that I was saying, both things are there. Positive, you were on the phone when I was describing this. There are positive and negative processes that we have to follow the principles to become self-controlled, but ultimate self-control will only come by pure Krishna consciousness. I described this, if you want you can listen to the cassette. For 5 minutes I was discussing this point.